walking that ribbon of highway, I saw above me that endless skyway. I saw below me that golden...
Hey guys, welcome to the fourth episode of BernieCast. I'd like to start by thanking everybody who's listened so far. We have seen incredible growth in our listeners, and the community around this podcast just keeps growing, and it's just phenomenal. It's beyond anything I ever expected when I started this project, and I got Mike on board, and my brother Jordan, and Zach here recently, the producer. And it's just continued to be an amazing adventure. And I hope that you guys will continue to listen as we move forward. With that out of the way, in this episode, we're going to go back a little bit and look at some of Bernie's core policy ideas by listening to a speech that he gave in Congress. And this was a while back. This was a few years ago, I believe. But in this speech, he talks about a 12-point plan, which is his agenda for America. It's clear and concise with a lot of great facts, which is why I particularly like it. And for those of you who haven't heard him talk about this stuff before, it'll be a great primer. But before we get into that, I'd like to go over some quick news. As many of you probably know from our previous special episode, where we covered Bernie's speech in Madison, Wisconsin, Bernie has been drawing really, really big crowds to events for a while now, making it increasingly difficult for the media to ignore him, as they've done in the past. In Iowa here just a few days ago, he had a town hall meeting that drew approximately 2,500 people, followed by an event in Portland, Maine that featured over 7,000 attendees. These large events are the largest of any candidate in the race at this point, and some have said that they look more like events you'd see in the general election weeks before the vote. And frankly, I have to agree. The number of people who come out to see Bernie speak are impressive. And I think that it's our job as his supporters to ensure those same people who come out to those events get out and vote for him in the primaries. Which brings me to a great resource to help friends and family get signed up to vote in the primaries, as well as yourself. And it's a website called voteforbernie.org. That's voteforbernie.org. If you head over there, there's information on how to participate in the primary in your state. In other news, there's some polls out now that show Bernie catching up to Hillary in Iowa. The most recent poll, the Quinnipiac poll, I'm not sure how that's pronounced, put him at a 33% to Hillary's 52%. That's an 18% jump from the last one held in May. This steady climb definitely has the Clinton camp feeling the burn, as some have put it in the media. In fact, Clinton's own aides have come out and spoken about being surprised at the momentum of the Sanders campaign, which I think is just awesome. They're obviously now unable to just shrug off Bernie Sanders and just wait for him to go away. He's not going away. He's here to stay. And then there's something else that happened today. Bernie introduced the Low Income Solar Act of 2015, which he says will help families across the country who struggle to pay electricity bills gain access to solar energy that can help reduce some of those costs. The bill would provide $200 million in loans and grants through the Department of Energy to offset the upfront costs for solar arrays on like community facilities, public housing, and low-income family homes. And this news, frankly, is in line with the goals Bernie outlines in his 12-point plan that we'll listen to. This should inform anyone wondering about how exactly he plans to revitalize America moving forward. So I really recommend sharing this episode with friends and family who are curious about Bernie and want to learn more. I'm very happy to be sharing this here, so let's go ahead and take a listen.
Some of the major initiatives that I intend to fight for in the new Congress. And there are 12 major initiatives which, if enacted, will transform the middle class of this country. Number one, we need a major investment to rebuild our crumbling infrastructure, our roads, bridges, water systems, wastewater plants, airports, railroads, schools, etc. It has been estimated that the cost of the Bush-Cheney war in Iraq, a war we should never have gotten into in the first place, will end up costing us some $3 trillion. Madam President, if we invested $1 trillion in rebuilding our crumbling infrastructure, we could create 13 million decent-paying jobs and make this country more efficient and more productive. We need to invest in infrastructure, not in war. Two, the United States must lead the world in reversing climate change and making certain that this planet is habitable for our children and grandchildren. We must transform our energy system away from fossil fuels and into energy efficiency and sustainable energies. And when we do that, make our transportation system energy efficient, make our homes more energy efficient, move to wind, solar, geothermal, biomass, we can also create a significant number of good-paying jobs. Three, we need to develop new economic models to increase job creation and productivity. Instead of giving huge tax breaks to corporations which ship our jobs to China and other low-wage countries, we need to provide assistance to workers who want to purchase their own businesses by establishing worker-owned cooperatives. Study after study shows that when workers have an ownership stake in the businesses in which they work, productivity goes up, absenteeism goes down, and employees are much more satisfied with their jobs. Four, union workers who are able to collectively bargain for higher wages and benefits earn substantially more than non-union workers. Today, corporate opposition to union organizing makes it extremely difficult for workers to join a union. We need legislation which makes it clear that when a majority of workers sign cards in support of a union, they can form that union. Five, the current federal minimum wage of $7.25 an hour is a starvation wage. We need to raise the minimum wage to a living wage. No one in this country who works 40 hours a week should live in poverty. Six, women workers today earn 78% of what their male counterparts make. We need pay equity in this country, equal pay for equal work. Seven, Madam President, since 2001, we have lost more than 60,000 factories in this country and more than 4.9 million decent-paying manufacturing jobs. We once led the world in terms of our manufacturing capability, yet in state after state, we have seen significant losses in manufacturing jobs, and when people walk into a store, it is harder and harder for them to purchase products made in the United States of America. Madam President, the time is now for us to end our disastrous trade policies, that's NAFTA, CAFTA, permanent normal trade relations with China, because these policies simply enable corporate America to shut down plants in this country and move to China and other low-wage countries. Madam President, we need to end the race to the bottom and to develop trade policies which protect the interests of American workers and not just multinational corporations. American companies should start investing in this country and not simply in China and other low-wage countries. Point number eight, in today's highly competitive global economy, millions of Americans are unable to afford the higher education they need in order to get good-paying jobs. 40, 50 years ago, we had a situation in this country where some of the great public universities of our nation, University of California, City University of New York, state colleges all over America were virtually tuition-free, and anybody could go to those schools, regardless of the income of their families. Today, for many, many families and young people, the cost of higher education is simply unaffordable. And either students choose not to go to college because they can't afford it, or they come out of school deeply in debt, a debt fastened on their shoulders for decades. Madam President, quality education in America, from childcare to higher education, must be affordable for all. Without a high-quality and affordable educational system, we will be unable to compete globally in the international economy, and our standard of living will continue to decline. We have got to invest in education. The idea that we are laying off teachers is completely absurd. Point number nine, the function of banking, the banking system, is to facilitate the flow of capital into the productive and job-creating economy. That's what banking is supposed to be. People save, people put money in banks, that money goes out into the economy so the people can buy homes, create businesses. Financial institutions cannot be an island unto themselves, standing as huge profit centers outside of the real productive economy. In other words, banking must be a means to an end, improving society, creating jobs, providing people with decent housing, not simply a means by which financial institutions make more and more profit. Madam President, today, six huge Wall Street financial institutions have assets equivalent to 61% of our gross domestic product, close to $10 trillion in six financial institutions. These institutions underwrite more than half the mortgages in this country and more than two-thirds of the credit cards. The greed, recklessness, and illegal behavior of major Wall Street firms plunged this country into the worst financial crisis since the 1930s. And every day, we open up our newspapers and we see another major banking scandal. The truth of the matter, Madam President, is that these financial institutions on Wall Street are too powerful to be reformed. They have too much money, they have too much wealth, they have too many lobbyists, they make too much in campaign contributions. Our goal must be to break them up. They have too much power, too much wealth. They must be broken up so that our financial institutions begin to serve the needs of the American people and not simply the CEOs and the stockholders of Wall Street firms. Number 10, the United States must join the rest of the industrialized world and recognize that healthcare is a right of all and not a privilege. I think many Americans don't know that we are the only major country on earth that does not guarantee healthcare to all people as a right. And yet, within this dysfunctional healthcare system, we today have 40 million people who have no health insurance. We have more people who are underinsured. We have millions of people with high premiums, high deductibles. And at the end of all of that, we end up spending almost twice as much per capita on health care as do the people of any other major country on earth. Madam President, the time is now for us to declare that health care is a right of all people, not a privilege. We need to pass a Medicare for all single-payer system. Point number 11. Madam President, millions of senior citizens in this country live in poverty, and we have the highest rate of childhood poverty of any major country on earth. I hear a lot of discussion on the part of my Republican colleagues and some Democrats that we should be cutting Social Security. Well, I strongly disagree. In my view, we must strengthen and expand Social Security, not cut it. And that is terribly important. especially at a time when more and more seniors are slipping into poverty, and we have millions of seniors who are trying to survive on $12,000, $13,000, $14,000 a year, making decisions every single day about whether they buy the medicine they need, whether they heat their homes adequately, or they buy the food that they need. We should not be cutting these programs. We should be expanding these programs. The 12th and last point that I would make, as part of an agenda that rebuilds America and rebuilds our middle class, is that at a time of massive wealth and income inequality, we need a progressive tax system in this country which is based on ability to pay. It is not acceptable that every single year we have major profitable corporations who pay nothing in federal income taxes. And it is not acceptable that we have corporate CEOs in this country who make millions of dollars every year, who enjoy an effective tax rate which is lower than their secretaries. That is grotesquely unfair, and it must be changed. Further, we have got to address the disgrace that every single year our country loses over $100 billion in revenue because corporations and the wealthy stash their money in offshore tax havens all over the world. The time is long overdue for real tax reform, which says to the wealthy, which says to large profitable corporations, that they have got to begin paying their fair share of taxes. So let me conclude, Madam President, by getting back to the point that I made in the beginning of my remarks, and that is that we are in a pivotal moment in American history. The very, very rich are becoming richer. The middle class is disappearing. And today we have more people living in poverty than at almost any time in American history. And with the wealth of the billionaire class, they are exercising their power politically because Citizens United, a disastrous Supreme Court decision, has given them the power to buy elections and control to a significant degree our political process. And we as a nation have ultimately got to make a decision about whether or not we are going to continue that process where the middle class continues to decline and the very, very richest people become richer, or whether we are prepared, and this is not easy stuff, to stand together to take on the billionaire class and their greed and to say enough is enough. This country does not just belong to the top 1% or the top 0.1%, but it belongs to all of us. And I hope very much that the American people make the right choice, because if they do, we can bring about a transformation of this country so the government begins to work for all of the people and not just the billionaires on top.
That was really awesome stuff. And just to reiterate, I'll go through the 12 points real quick for you once again. Number one, major investment to rebuild crumbling infrastructure. Number two, address climate change and advance clean energy. Number three, worker co-ops. Number four, unions and collective bargaining. Number five, increase minimum wage to a living wage. Number six, pay equity and equal pay for equal work. Number seven, revitalize manufacturing and trade deals that work for the American worker. Number eight, free education and more focus on education. Number nine, break up the big banks and get them back to their core functions and true purpose. Number 10, universal healthcare. Number 11, expand social safety net programs. And number 12, a progressive tax system focused on the ability to pay. So I think that these are pretty clear common sense goals and something you'd expect from a presidential candidate. I mean, listening to the other folks in the race, I'd say we're pretty fortunate to have this guy running for president. And I think that's pretty much where I'll leave it for this episode. With my two producers out this week, I decided to keep it shorter than usual, but I'll be back next week with Mike and we'll put together something extra special to make up for this one. But if you need more this week, if you're hungry for more information, I'd recommend listening to a great book by Robert Reich. He's an awesome progressive who has served in various positions in government in like Bill Clinton's administration, as well as a couple of others. And he is just a wonderful spokesperson for the working class. And his book, Beyond Outrage, What Has Gone Wrong with Our Economy and Our Democracy and How to Fix It, you'll find great information on how we got to this point we're at and how we can go about changing things here in the U.S. and work towards making a brighter future for ourselves and the country we love. I'm going to tell you how to get this book for free after we listen to a sample.
I've written this book to give you the big picture of why and how our economy and our democracy are becoming rigged against average working people, and what must be done, and what you can do about it. I've called it Beyond Outrage for a very specific reason. Your outrage is understandable. Moral outrage is the prerequisite of social change. But you also need to move beyond outrage and take action. The regressive forces seeking to move our nation backward must not be allowed to triumph. I've been involved in public life, on and off, for more than 40 years. I've served under three presidents. When not in office, I've done my share of organizing and rabble-rousing, along with teaching, speaking, and writing about what I know and what I believe. I've never been as concerned as I am now about the future of our democracy, the corrupting effects of big money on our politics, the stridency and demagoguery of the regressive right, and the accumulation of wealth and power at the very top. We're perilously close to losing an economy and a democracy that are meant to work for everyone, and to replacing them with an economy and a government that will exist mainly for a very wealthy few and powerful people. This book is meant to help you focus on what needs to be done and how you can contribute, and to encourage you not to feel bound by what you think is politically possible this year or next. You need to understand why the stakes are so high and why your participation now and in the future is so important. I've tried to array concepts and arguments in a way that you'll find helpful. All the facts I've cited are from government reports unless otherwise indicated. In my experience, nothing good happens in Washington unless good people outside Washington become mobilized, organized, and energized to make it happen. Nothing worth changing in America will actually change unless you and others like you are committed to achieving that change. The first thing you need to do is connect the dots and understand how many troubling but seemingly unrelated things are interwoven. The challenge we face is systemic. The fundamentals of our economy are out of whack, which has distorted our democracy, and these distortions in turn are making it harder to fix the economic fundamentals.
You can get this book, Beyond Outrage, as an audiobook for free by heading over to audibletrial.com/BernieCast. That's audibletrial.com/BernieCast for a free month of the Audible audiobook service. If you head over there and do that, it'll support BernieCast, the amazing person that is Robert Raich, and you'll get a free audiobook to listen to, and it will cost you nothing. So one last time, that's audibletrial.com/BernieCast. Also, if you'd like to support us in another way, we have a Patreon page you can find by going to BernieCast.com and clicking the donate button at the top of the page. If you choose to support us, you will become a subscriber and will be able to get exclusive content that only supporters receive. There are other rewards you get for backing at different levels, so go over there and check it out. Once again, you can get there by heading to BernieCast.com and clicking the donate link. Finally, if you want to follow BernieCast, you can do so at Bernie Podcast on Twitter or on Facebook via facebook.com/BerniePodcast or on Google Plus. The URL is google.com/plusBernieCastPodcast. And I'm Ryan Sipes, and you can follow me on Twitter. My handle is at Ryan Lee Sipes. I'm glad you tuned into this episode, and I hope you'll tune in next week for the next episode of BernieCast.